And up next on the program, she is a Yale historian and the author of The Field of Blood, Violence in Congress and the Road to Civil War. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by Dr. Joanne Freeman. Joanne, thanks for being with us.
Well, sure. I guess I can't quite say it's my pleasure, but I'm happy to be here.
It is quite a day in American history. You have written about violence in Congress, but this is, to my recollection, the first time since 1814 that violence in Congress has come from outside forces.
Well, I suppose you could say that is true. What's interesting is that the threat of violence in Congress on a mass scale happened throughout the 19th century, but as far as actually being carried out like this, we're watching pretty unprecedented happenings unfold right now.
It's very surreal to me to watch this, and I think, as any American would, it hurts. It hurts my heart. It hurts my soul to see these people in our house, the people's house.
Well, exactly. It's a desecration of our sort of center of democracy, of American democracy, of our house. It's an attack on democracy. On so many levels, it's heartbreaking and outraging, and kind of beyond belief, although unfortunately it's well within belief. We've had people calling for violence, and I think people sometimes forget, not all of them. I think some people using calls for violence have been actually wanting them, but I think more people have been assuming you can toss that kind of rhetoric around for strategic purpose and maybe gain a power play through it, and don't think about the fact that that kind of rhetoric coming down from national power holders can have an impact.
And we've seen protests in Washington as our capital. Of course, it's going to be the scene of a lot of protests, and sometimes they get ugly, but have we ever seen anything at this level in terms of breaching the halls of power?
Not to this degree, not like this, not so wide scale and blatant, not, you know, vandalizing offices and banging down doors. I mean, it's just, in some ways, it's beyond belief. Now, what's interesting to me as a historian who writes about violence in Congress is what I've been thinking all day is in the 1850s, when Congress was really beginning to be divided over the problem of slavery, there were some people in 1850 when they were trying to create a compromise, and increasingly a compromise didn't seem possible, there were some members of Congress who were afraid not of other congressmen attacking them, but of the public streaming into the House of Representatives and attacking them. That was their real fear, was that it would be very easy for members of the public, and as one North Carolina congressman put it, you know, there are hundreds of them milling about the Capitol at any moment. They could swarm in here armed and cause bloodshed. So the idea of the populace, you know, the power in a democracy, using that power in this, I guess sacrilegious isn't the right word, but in this way certainly is not a new idea, but generally speaking, it's been a threat, it's been a form of intimidation, and it hasn't been carried out in this extreme and ugly a manner.
We're talking with Dr. Joanne Freeman here on Downtown. This attempted insurrection will end. Everything will be quelled, I'm sure, in fairly short order. But it doesn't end here. What happens next, do you think?
Well, that's the thing, right, is that it's on the one hand, we can say, yeah, well, there'll be order, will be restored, and these people in one way or another will leave, and, you know, people can go back to counting electoral votes. But the fact of the matter is we've been watching in the last 4 years, an erosion of trust in American institutions of government on all levels. And the most fervent erosion, of course, has been on the whole electoral process. This is now, for all of the world, but particularly for all Americans to see, it's showing the fragility of democracy. It's showing, it's demonstrating in some ways institutions aren't all powerful. Now, there are two lessons you might take away from that. On one hand, you might say, well, given the vulnerability here, we really need to stand up and protect democracy. It's fragile. It needs involved citizens. That's the message that I would hope for. I think some people will come away from this unfortunately, feeling more discouraged about the stability of national institutions. And on a widespread scale, that's a dangerous thing. So, you know, it's tempting, and it has been tempting all along, to say, you know, let's pretend that today had gone swimmingly and nothing had happened. And some people are saying, well, good, electoral votes decided, election over. I have never thought that that would be the case, nor do I assume that once there's an inauguration, that this conflict and polarization will go away. I think we're going to be called upon as Americans to protect and defend democracy by being alert and engaged and standing up for what we believe in and not letting basically violent, I don't know what one could call them, if one could call them terrorists or not, but not letting these violent people basically steal the foundations of democracy, our capital, and the working of Congress from us. There is a theft from the American people.
Are there lessons from history, perhaps in the post-Civil War period, of how at some point we can begin a healing process and bring some of these people back into the fold? Is it possible?
It is possible, for sure. What's interesting about it, if you look in the immediate years, like right at the end of the Civil War, what you notice is that there were some Southerners who returned to Congress and were still belligerent and angry and assumed in some way or another that they could still bully and threaten Congress into doing what they wanted. What's interesting about that moment is that Northerners at that point had won a war, and they used that moment not to be violent in return, but to stand up and say, yeah, you're not in power anymore. We don't want that behavior anymore, and it's not going to stand here. And it took a little bit of people taking a stand for what was right to finally make it clear that that kind of outrageous behavior would not be accepted. So on the one hand, obviously, we need to talk about healing, and we need to talk about coming together again. I think we also have to think about ways in which there is some accountability. And I don't mean revengeful or spiteful or you know, I mean that people who are doing what's going on now, in some cases, there needs to be some accountability for what's happening. There needs to be proof that actually institutions of government do have at least some strength and some will to keep democracy going.
Can you put this in some historical perspective for us? If we look at the events of today as an extension of the election season, are we at a lower point than we were at either, oh, I don't know, the election of 1884, I believe it was, with Cleveland and Maine's own James G. Blaine that was so very ugly, or even back to 1800 and the Adams-Jefferson race? Was it worse in the past?
Well, when you look over the sort of broad arc of history, times are different, and sometimes it's hard to make that comparison. Now, the election of 1800, in a sense, that was a very similar election, high polarization, people on each side accusing the others of trying to destroy America, a lot of intense rhetoric, people, you know, on one side saying that they're out to steal your Bibles, bury your Bibles, and people on the other side saying they're out to create anarchy, and all kinds of charges. What's interesting is that there was a point, and it's a letter that I only recently actually either came across or rediscovered, but there's a letter from Thomas Jefferson after that election in which he acknowledges to a friend that when the election, it ends up being a tie, it's thrown to the House, it seems that the tie can't be broken. He says in this letter that it was made known to people on the other side of the aisle that there would be violence if the process was not allowed to continue in a democratic fashion. Mm. That's a remarkable statement. And that's 1801.
Is what we're seeing today the product of one individual, or is this a systemic weakness in our country right now?
Well, one individual is fueling a lot of it, but the fact of the matter is there is the glory of democracy is the vulnerability of democracy, right? The glory of democracy is that we, the people, give people power, take power away, power rests with us. The fragility, the vulnerability of democracy is that we, the people, can be fooled, we, the people, can be swayed, we, the people, can forget our duty as citizens. We can do any number of things that can make situations more difficult than they need to be, and particularly when leaders take advantage of that, that's a vulnerability. So, you know, the freedoms that we value as a democratic country create vulnerabilities too. I think, you know, if you were looking for one positive message to take from all this, I would say that it would be a wonderful thing if we emerge from today and this current electoral crisis, if Americans emerge well aware of the fact that we're not invincible, democracy isn't invincible, and that you really need to stand up and engage and defend democratic institutions. They matter. They have value. They are what makes America America, and they don't go of themselves, although I think many of us have forgotten that for a stretch of time.
Wise words indeed. Historian Dr. Joanne Freeman with us. Before we let you go, how is Newbie handling this stressful day?
Newbie is my rescue parakeet who was found in Central Park. Newbie actually was very upset earlier today when events were unfolding, and I don't know whether it was the tone of talk on TV or what it was, but he was literally screaming and jumping around his cage. So basically, he, like us, is very upset about this attack on democracy, is all I can take from that.
That is a perceptive bird right there, no question about that. Joanne, it's always good to talk with you. Really appreciate you making time for us late notice on this busy day. Stay safe and be well.
Thanks. You too.